Astacio over the years, including with his wife and an eyewitness at democracynow.org. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
CFRC from Kingston, Ontario. Your volunteer program, campus and community radio at 101.9 FM and on the web at cfrc.ca.
It will henceforth be the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female.
There are gay, lesbian, and transgender children in Democratic, Republican, and independent families, some who fear for their lives.
I don't think many of us asked to be on the vanguard of this, but here we are. And we are building a world where future generations, I hope to God, don't have to fight this same fight.
I just want to say tonight that trans people are not invisible.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Quick study, Kazakh senators pass a no-promo homo bill. Trump's vile war on trans kids escalates. And 2025's queerest news and feature stories in review. All that and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
Raquel.
And I'm Michael Laveau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending December 20th, 2025. Members of Kazakhstan's Senate are apparently quick studies, so quick that after announcing they needed time to study the bill to ban so-called LGBT propaganda, they passed it just 2 weeks later on December 18th, ratifying legislation unanimously approved by the lower house in November. Kazakhstan is a predominantly Muslim former Soviet republic in Central Asia. It has a secular government, but it is socially very conservative. The Kazakh No Promo Homo law is similar to the ones in Russia and Hungary. It punishes LGBT propaganda online or in the media with fines for violators and up to 10 days in jail for repeat offenders. President Kasym-Jomart Tokayev has said he will sign the bill. That brief period of study coincided with a visit from European Union officials. Senate Deputy Speaker Zakip Azanov met with European Union Ambassador to Kazakhstan, Alexa Simkik, on December 3rd, the same day the Senate delayed its vote. After that meeting, Simkik told Vlas.kz, "We were contacted by the LGBT community, who are very concerned because they are already now seeing some intolerance issues." International rights groups say those fears are justified. The European chapter of the global queer rights organization, ILGA, warned that the law will undermine fundamental rights guaranteed under Kazakhstan's constitution, particularly the principle of equality and non-discrimination, by directly targeting and stigmatizing LGBTI people and anyone perceived to support them.
The Trump administration is escalating its war on transgender young people on multiple fronts as 2025 nears its end. On December 18th, the Department of Health and Human Services announced plans to virtually ban pediatric gender-affirming health care nationwide. That includes puberty blockers, hormone therapies, and surgeries, even though surgery is rarely, if ever, a treatment option for minors. Under the new policy, hospitals that provide such care would lose access to federal funding. Nearly every hospital in the United States relies on some form of federal funding. The new guidelines also specifically bar Medicaid from covering gender-affirming care. Medicaid is a joint federal-state program that provides health insurance for adults and children with limited income and resources. These actions stem from a late January executive order signed by President Donald Trump titled Protecting Children from Chemical and Surgical Mutilation. The order insists that there are only two genders, male and female, placing transgender young people directly in the administration's political crosshairs. In announcing the new guidelines, HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. claimed that the federal government will do everything in its power to stop unsafe, irreversible practices that put our children at risk. That characterization is rejected by every major medical and mental health organization in the United States, including the American Medical Association, the American Psychiatric Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. Medical experts emphasize that puberty blockers and hormone therapies for minors can, in some cases, be literally life-saving.
The Republican-controlled U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill this week that would criminalize parents and medical professionals for providing gender-affirming care to transgender patients under the age of 18. The legislation is called the Protect Children's Innocence Act. Its lead sponsor is Georgia Congress member Marjorie Taylor Greene, who has built her political career promoting far-right conspiracy theories and publicly demonizing transgender people. If enacted, the bill would impose hefty fines and prison sentences of up to 10 years on those who provide this care. The measure passed narrowly on December 17th. Three Democrats broke ranks to supply the votes needed for passage, while four Republicans voted against their party. Three members from each party did not vote at all. Civil rights groups condemned the bill shortly after the vote. An American Civil Liberties Union spokesperson, Mike Zamore, criticized what he called ill-equipped politicians who supported the measure, saying their actions were driven by ideology, not scientific fact. Zamore added, "We strongly condemn the passage of this measure and urge members of the Senate to do everything in their power to prevent it from ever becoming law." Passage in the 100-member upper chamber would require a 60-vote supermajority, a threshold many political observers believe the bill is unlikely to reach.
The U.S. House of Representatives has passed another measure targeting transgender health care. On December 18th, lawmakers approved the Do No Harm in Medicaid Act, a bill sponsored by Texas Republican Dan Crenshaw. The legislation would block all Medicaid funding for gender-affirming care for minors. Crenshaw's bill passed by a vote of 215 to 201, with four Democrats joining the Republican majority. Crenshaw argues that his proposal faces fewer obstacles in the Senate than other recent anti-trans legislation. He claims the Do No Harm in Medicaid Act would not be subject to the 60-vote threshold required for most bills. Instead, he says it could advance under the reconciliation process, a procedural workaround reserved for certain budget-related measures that allows passage with a simple majority. Senate Republicans currently hold 53 seats, compared with 47 for Democrats.
In other U.S. news, county officials in North Carolina have taken the rare step of dismantling a public body over a children's picture book. The Randolph County Board of Commissioners has disbanded its 9-member library board after it approved a book for children's shelves titled Call Me Max. The picture book tells the story of a young transgender boy coming to terms with his identity and the friends he makes along the way. The book's author, Stonewall Award-winning writer Kyle Lukoff, has described it as a sweet and age-appropriate introduction to what it means to be transgender. The commissioners acted after the library board rejected a complaint demanding that the book be removed from children's shelves or relocated out of reach of young readers. Opposition to the book was led by Tim Fitzgerald of the North Carolina Values Coalition. Fitzgerald claimed the story teaches children that their parents may be wrong about their gender and that their gender is actually whatever they feel it is. Casey Meehan, director of PEN America's Freedom to Read program, told the Washington Post that dissolving the library board was a pretty dramatic response to wanting to have diverse and inclusive books on shelves. Under North Carolina law, county commissioners are permitted to disband library boards, a power that is rarely used and does not even require the resulting vacancies to be filled. Call Me Max has already been banned by school districts in Florida, Indiana, and Minnesota, and nationally by the U.S. Defense Department and its military-run schools.
Finally, lawmakers in the Florida city of St. Petersburg have found a workaround to state and federal efforts to erase rainbow crosswalks across the so-called Sunshine State. Officials elsewhere in Florida, including in the home state of the original Don't Say Gay law, claim that rainbow crosswalks violate state bans on so-called political symbols. Trump Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy has gone further, insisting the colorful crossings are a dangerous distraction to drivers, a claim for which there is no supporting evidence. Rather than repainting streets, St. Petersburg's local government has taken a different approach. City officials recently announced the installation of 11 multicolored bike racks, which do not violate the state's restrictions on rainbow crosswalks. Mayor Ken Welsh's Chief of Staff Jordan Doyle Walsh thanked members of the St. Petersburg City Council for their support in an email obtained by Florida Politics. Walsh wrote, "We intend that this small gesture of inclusion and celebration will be a symbol of our resolve to not be silenced."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending December 20th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Nico Raquel. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay safe.
Special News Wrap thanks this week to Tanya Kane Perry.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
And now it's time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind. Your look at the moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
From hard-won victories to cultural firsts, from the unknown to the iconic legends.
We celebrate the people and events that remind us how far we've come and how far we still shine. I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lund. As the year closes, we remember and celebrate Frank Kameny, who in December 1955 was fired from his job as an astronomer in the U.S. Army's MAP service in Washington, D.C., because of his homosexuality. A few days later, he's blacklisted from seeking federal employment. These events spur Kameny into being a gay rights activist. He's been referred to as one of the most significant figures in the American gay rights movement.
Bisexual blues singer Ma Rainey passed away on December 22, 1939, at the age of 53. Billed as the mother of the blues, she was one of the earliest African-American professional blues singers and one of the first generation of blues singers to record. Some of Rainey's lyrics contain references to lesbianism or bisexuality, such as the 1928 song, "Prove It On Me."
Now, let's rewind to some key queer moments. In 1981, Time and Newsweek magazines run their first major stories about AIDS.
And to close out 2025's Rainbow Rewind on some positive notes, in 1973, a United States federal judge issues a bulletin stating that the federal civil service may not terminate an employee based on sexual orientation alone.
In Canada in 2004, Newfoundland and Labrador became the 8th Canadian provinces to legalize same-sex marriage. And in 2007, the Nepal Supreme Court orders the end of anti-LGBTQ laws and creates new laws that safeguard LGBTQ people.
That's this year's final Rainbow Rewind.
We'll be back in 2026 with much more, because our stories aren't just in the past. They're the pride that powers our future.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
Stay tuned. More This Way Out is just ahead.
Listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Will soon be in the rearview mirror, and for many LGBTQ people and their allies, the end can't come soon enough.
As in past years, rights continue to be won and lost around the world. But these past 12 months have been even more turbulent than usual, at least here in the United States. Since day one of his second presidential term, Donald Trump and his minions have been on a mission to erase the existence of transgender people, especially targeting trans kids under the age of 18, their families, and caregivers. As you'll hear in the first part of our review of This Way Out's Queerest News and Feature Stories of 2025, Trump has simply been following a playbook created more than 8 years ago.
I'm Wendy Natividad.
And I'm David Hunt.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending January 25th, 2025. Transgender people are near the top of the list of marginalized people targeted in United States President Donald Trump's inaugural salvo against human and civil rights. Speaking plainly in his meandering, bias-fueled January 20th address, he carried out one of his principal campaign promises.
It will henceforth be the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female.
Trump signed a head-spinning flurry of more than 200 executive orders on day one. One order virtually denies the existence of transgender people. The option of X as a gender marker on U.S. passports or visas will be eliminated.
Trump took the opportunity to slap both his predecessor and transgender rights by rescinding outgoing President Joe Biden's executive order that required all federal agencies to address anti-trans bias in their policies and actions. Another Trump executive order rescinded Biden's directive to open service in the U.S. military to qualified transgender enlistees. He's expected to issue a new ban soon.
Queer advocates are discovering that references to LGBTQ plus identities and HIV-related resources have vanished overnight from WhiteHouse.gov and several other federal agency websites.
An explosion of calls to LGBTQ youth crisis hotlines is one of the most tangible, real-life results of Trump's election, inaugural vitriol, and dozens of anti-queer executive orders. The Rainbow Youth Project USA Foundation told The Advocate that it usually handles less than 3,800 calls per month. They fielded more than 8,000 calls in November and December following Trump's election. On Inauguration Day, they got more than 1,400 calls.
Finally, the Right Reverend Marian Edgar Buddy made Donald Trump squirm at the traditional inaugural prayer service in the National Cathedral on January 21st. The Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington, D.C., dared to challenge the newly installed president's anti-queer and anti-immigrant statements and policies face-to-face from the pulpit.
Let me make one final plea, Mr. President. Millions have put their trust in you. And as you told the nation yesterday, you have felt the providential hand of a loving God. In the name of our God, I ask you to have mercy upon the people in our country who are scared now. There are gay, lesbian, and transgender children in Democratic, Republican, and independent families, some who fear for their lives. And the people who pick our crops and clean our office buildings, who labor in poultry farms and meat packing plants, who wash the dishes after we eat in restaurants and work the night shifts in hospitals, they may not be citizens or have the proper documentation. But the vast majority of immigrants are not criminals. They pay taxes and are good neighbors. They are faithful members of our churches and mosques, synagogues, wadara, and temples. I ask you to have mercy, Mr. President, on those in our communities whose children fear that their parents will be taken away. May God grant us the strength and courage to honor the dignity of every human being, to speak the truth to one another in love, and walk humbly with each other and our God for the good of all people, good of all people in this nation and the world. Amen.
That was the Right Reverend Marian Edgar Buddy, Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington, D.C., quite literally speaking truth to power. Predictably, she says that right-wing trolls are wishing her dead.
Look what they done to my song, Ma. Look what they done to my song, Ma. It was the only thing I could do half right. It's turning out all wrong, Ma. Look what they done to my song.
In the news business, when a reporter dominates coverage of an issue or event, tapping the best sources and providing the most insightful analysis, we say they own the story. If anyone owns the story of the right's assault on transgender Americans, it's Aaron Reed.
I don't think many of us asked to be on the vanguard of this, but here we are. We're here, and we are building a world where future generations, I hope to God, don't have to fight this same fight. And as much as all the sound and fury from the top of the Oval Office is sort of raining down upon us, there are more people like me than ever before that are public, that are themselves.
Reed isn't just one of a small group of queer journalists covering national politics. She's one of an even smaller subset of transgender journalists. As such, she's covering the political assault on her own rights, even her own existence.
The same organizations that have become very popular, famous now, infamous now, you know, your Alliance Defending Freedom, your Project 2025, groups like the Heritage Foundation and more, they held a conference in 2017 in Phoenix, Arizona, and they planned out their strategy for what we're seeing now. One of the architects of the plan from the American Principles Project, Terry Schilling, had specifically said that they were going to start with sports, so that way they could get people comfortable with discriminating. And then after they got you with sports, they were going to go to kids, and then they were going to go to bathrooms, and then they were going to continue growing on that more and more and more. And the same groups that, you know, were part of that conference are now the ones that are writing the Trump executive order.
Journalist Aaron Reed. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 8th, 2025.
With this executive order, the war on women's sports is over. So this will effectively end the attack on female athletes at public K-12 schools and virtually all U.S. colleges and universities.
U.S. President Donald Trump is banning trans girls and women from competing in female sports at federally funded schools and universities. It's the latest blistering executive order targeting transgender people. Trump rambled on in a 30-minute February 5th pre-signing speech littered with several lies and inflammatory claims. He falsely claimed that trans athletes had won more than 3,500 victories and invaded more than 11,000 competitions. He perpetuated the lie that men are beating up, injuring, and cheating our women and our girls. The order is officially titled No Men in Women's Sports, and it was the president's so-called celebration of National Girls and Women in Sports Day. The ceremonial photo op featured dozens of girls and young women surrounding the adjudicated rapist as he signed the order. Executive orders are not law, but they are specific directives issued by the president to all federal agencies.
The impact of the No Men in Women's Sports executive order is already being felt. Within hours of Trump's signing it, the National Collegiate Athletic Association announced that it would comply. NCAA President Charlie Baker said in a press statement, "We strongly believe that clear, consistent, and uniform eligibility standards would best serve today's student athletes instead of a patchwork of conflicting state laws and court decisions." To that end, President Trump's order provides a clear national standard. Baker recently testified before a U.S. Senate panel that fewer than 10 transgender athletes among some 510,000 competitors currently participate in NCAA sports.
All references to transgender people are disappearing from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website. Further fallout from Trump's executive orders that all federal agencies stop promoting gender ideology. Researchers at the nation's Atlanta, Georgia-based CDC have also been instructed to cleanse a list of specific phrases from their work product before any publication. Gender, transgender, pregnant person, pregnant people, LGBT, transsexual, non-binary, assigned male at birth, assigned female at birth, and biologically male, biologically female. In the words of GLAAD's Sarah Kate Ellis, Trump is clearly committed to censorship of any information containing or related to LGBTQ Americans and issues that we face. The queer advocacy group's president said that his pathetic attempt to diminish and remove us will again prove unsuccessful.
Finally, many are calling the 67th annual Grammy Awards the queerest ever. Quite a few openly LGBTQ performers and several outspoken allies took home trophies in Los Angeles on February 2nd. Lesbian rapper and actor Queen Latifah presented veteran hitmaker Alicia Keys with a Dr. Dre Global Impact Award.
This is not the time to shut down the diversity of voices. We've seen on this stage talented, hardworking people from different backgrounds with different points of view, and it changes the game. DEI is not a threat, it's a gift.
Lesbian singer Chappelle Roan performed her chart-topping Pink Pony Club during the telecast and then won the Best New Artist Grammy. She stressed trans rights during a red carpet interview ahead of the ceremonies.
I would not be here without trans girls. So just know that pop music is thinking about you and cares about you. And I'm trying my best to, like, really stand up for you.
Longtime ally Lady Gaga won the Grammy for Best Pop Duo Group Performance for Die With a Smile, which she sang with Bruno Mars.
And I just want to say tonight that trans people are not invisible. Trans people deserve love. The queer community deserves to be lifted up. Music is love. Thank you.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending February 8th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazor, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V. Stay healthy.
And I'm Ava Davis. Stay safe.
Our review of the queerest news and feature stories of 2025 continues next time on This Way Out. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Nico Raquel and Michael LeBeau and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written and produced by Sherry Lund and Brian DeShazer. Greg Gordon produced this week's Queerest News of 2025 feature with the archival news reporters Wendy Natividad, David Hunt, John Dyer V, and Ava Davis. Ma Rainey, Triumph, Melanie Sofka, and Chapel Roan performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Hal Myers of Santa Fe, New Mexico, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappelle, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on Fresh FM, Nelson, Tasman, Belham, Eastern Golden Bay, New Zealand, KHHA Arcata, California, WRFN Nashville, Tennessee, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
For tea or coffee, indie, folk, rock, electronic, I've got it all. Tune in to What's Brewing Tuesdays from 7:30 to 8 a.m. for the freshest Canadian music to pair with your morning brew. Listen in as I chat over a cup of something fresh and talk about my favorite new releases from Canadian artists that I love. Nothing like good music and good coffee to start your day, so tune in to see What's Brewing. And good morning. It is 7:30 a.m. here in Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned into CFRC 101.9 FM, CFRC.ca for those of you listening in through the web. We are located on the lower level of Carruthers Hall on the beautiful Queen's campus. My name is May, and you are now listening to What's Brewing. So this week is very heavy in the sense that it's a lot of rock music. I have some sludge metal, I have some grunge, new gaze, alt rock, math rock, punk adjacent, emo. That's what we're going with today. So to kick things off, we have Franklin with their newest single, Shark, released November 2nd. This is a White Horse-based sludge metal duo in anticipation of their new album, Decay, out January 31st. This is their debut album, actually. This album wrestles with time, rage, and persistence, and they say that their music feels like the North. It's vast, desolate, and a little unhinged, which I think is the perfect intro to a band ever. After that, we have Scorch with Monochromatic. This was released as a single on December 11th. This is a Montreal-based grunge new gaze group, and they have a fully animated music video on their YouTube for this track. It's absolutely insane. The visuals are done by Bad Cherry. You can see more of that on their social media or directly on their YouTube. This is also in anticipation of their new album, Catalepsy, coming out January 9th. So some things to look forward to in the new year. And then after that, we have Sticks and Stones Band with Savior, released as a single November 21st. This is a Toronto-based rock metal group reminiscent of like the 2000s hard rock. And it's led by a duo of brothers, Nicholas and Robert Lasanti. So without further ado, we're going to get right into things with Franklin and Shark right here on What's Brewing CFRC 101.9 FM. and welcome back. You just finished listening to Savior by Sticks and Stones Band. Before that, we had Monochromatic by Scorch. And at the very top of that set, we had Franklin with their newest single, Shark, right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. This is What's Brewing. Coming up next, we have Lonely Little Kitsch with Puncture Wounds. This was released as a single November 13th. They are a Niagara-based alt-rock group. This song is about disassociating and wanting to feel numb when something is too painful or your emotions are too overwhelming. You'd rather just shut down and feel nothing at all. They also said that they're lifelong music fans, self-described music nerds, and they wanted to create their own brand of alternative music that wasn't defined by current trends or labels. So they're definitely someone to look out for. And then finally, we have Deer Fang and Seventh Dose partnering up with Broken. This was released as a single on December 10th. Deer Fang is a St. Catharines-based grunge gaze group. And then Seventh Dose is a Toronto-based, more punk rock alternative group. This is in anticipation of Deer Fang's upcoming debut album, expected to release in March of 2026. So another thing to look forward to. This song specifically is about learning from the past and moving forward, that we may have our flaws, but we are not lesser people for them. Sometimes we wear masks to hide those flaws, to disguise ourselves, when in reality, the more we embrace our imperfections, the easier it is to move forward. So without further ado, here's Lonely Little Kitsch with Puncture Wounds on CFRC 101.9 FM. This is What's Brewing.
In a thought, don't make a sound. I can't see.
just heard from Deer Fang in Seventh Dose with Broken. Before that, we had Puncture Wounds by Lonely Little Kitch. We're getting into our last two songs of the half hour. So to kick things off, we have Computer with Weird New Vocation, released on their album Station on the Hill from October 10th. This is a Vancouver-based math rock, noise rock, post-punk-ish group. This song is about overstimulation, the disillusionment of self and success. They have a lot of wordplay in it, and this also started as a two-man recording project and has now grown with sax, synth, percussion, and more. And then finally, we're going to finish today off with STEM Champ and Reality Dawns, released as a single December 12th. This is an Edmonton-based emo-tinged indie rock group following up to their album Prairie Skies Forever from November of last year. This is a song about falling into desire and reaching towards better tomorrows. This is also noted as a farewell song. They may be taking some time off to work on new music and projects, but definitely keep an eye out for them. Here's Computer with Weird New Vocation on CFRC 101.9 FM. This is What's Brewing.
Better about myself. Wednesdays at 6 p.m. here on CFRC. Listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast to Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM.